Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are in the world. This is Walter Davis with the San Diego County Community Coalition and the Citizens Internet Television and Radio Network radio channel. And we're honored today to be talking about the first Americans being Africans. And we are hoping to get the author of the book, Dr. David Jones Imhotep, to appear on our show. We're also supposed to have Alton Glass. He's a movie maker who made the film The Confidant, among others. He's a young black filmmaker in North Hollywood. And again, we have the honor and distinction to have Mr. Clifford Caffey, the founder of the Black Card. And right now we have Clifford Caffey on board. Welcome aboard to the radio show, Clifford.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation and given the opportunity to express what I'm so passionate about, and that's the Black Card.
Okay, and I just got a notification by text that Mr. Alton Glass will not be making it to the radio show today. He's got called to make a shoot, so he's not going to be coming aboard, so that's unfortunate. But hopefully we'll get Dr. Imhotep to come aboard and talk about his book, The First Americans Were Africans. And so, Clifford, since you're one of the sponsors of the show, why don't you go ahead and tell the audience about the Black Card?
Well, the Black Card is a consumer-based card that's free for the consumers to sign up for, and it can go to our website, which is blackcarddiscountswithas.com. And sign up for this free card to give them exclusive memberships to African-American-owned businesses. And basically, this card is designed to connect the dots with African-American consumers and African-American-owned businesses. But the card is available to all who want to subscribe and get these membership discounts. But the reason why we put this together is because in our community, we spend about $1.3 trillion on an annual basis, and a lot of those dollars flow outside of our community. And what we'd like to see with the Black Card is that reinvestment of those dollars back into our community so we can start bringing back some very important programs that are missing in our community today. For example, when I was a little boy, we had a library in the community. I just recently went back to my old neighborhood, and that library is closed down today, and that's because there is a lack of dollars flowing in the community. So the Black Card is going to help from that perspective. And since there's $1.3 trillion on the table, if we can recycle just, a small percentage of it, even if it's just 1% back into our community, that will help significantly in our community. So the Black Card is designed to do that. And currently, it's sweeping across the nation because it is a movement. And as you can, look at the demographics throughout the United States, African Americans are all over throughout the United States in various pockets of the country. Like, for example, and the largest black populations, you're looking at Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, Detroit, Houston, Los Angeles, Miami, New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. are some of the largest black population. So we're going to be actively targeting those areas to get those African-American consumers to sign up for that card so we can start recycling all these dollars.
Okay, and excellent. And Dr. Imhotep, is that you? A person from the 704 area code, is that Dr. Imhotep?
Hello?
Yeah, someone is calling from the 704 area code. Can you identify yourself?
I'm on the air.
Yes, you are.
Okay. My name is David. I'm calling on something a little off topic. I wanted to discuss the Coca-Cola commercial from the Super Bowl. It's caused a controversy among racist right-wingers. I don't know if you've heard about this, but I just wanted to ask about your opinion about this whole deal.
Okay. Are you referring to the commercial where there is a mixed-race couple?
No, not that commercial. It's a different commercial.
Okay, well, tell me what you're referring to.
There's a commercial that aired last night that was a bunch of different races and a bunch of different cultures singing America the Beautiful in various different languages. And a lot of racist white Republicans have made a big deal about it, saying it's the destruction of white America, basically.
Okay, well, I didn't watch the Super Bowl, so I'm not familiar with what you're referring to. And so what are your feelings about it?
I am angry that conservatives are mad about this. This is a country for all people, black, white, Asian, anything. They have no right to say that that commercial was targeting the end of white America. They're just racist, and I'm sick of these right-wing conservatives making a big deal about race. We're all the same. So this is why Republicans aren't in office. This is why they probably won't be in office in 2016.
Well, you know, I really wish that was the case, but it's really not. There's actually indications that, you know, Democrats might lose control. Unfortunately, people vote against their own self-interest. That's why you have any Republicans in office at all. So
I myself, I'm not really any. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go on.
I was going to say I'm not either any political party. I'm an independent, but I lean more towards the left on civil rights issues. Actually, I'm 100% left on race rights.
Okay, I understand. So, Clifford, do you want to speak on that?
You know, when it comes to the political landscape and the way things are viewed, like you mentioned that video or commercial that was shown on the Super Bowl, I didn't get the opportunity to see it myself either, so I really can't speak intelligently on the video itself. But I will say that I do agree with that, you know, everyone should have equal rights, no matter what your nationality. Everyone should have an equal opportunity to create wealth, no matter what your nationality is. You know, the United States is definitely a melting pot. And I think sometimes we forget that it is a melting pot. And some of the legacy organizations, legacy ethnic groups that have been here since the inception of the United States oftentimes want to maintain control of that. And when you maintain control of the wealth, you have the opportunity to maintain control of the political system. Because there's a lot of money that flows through the political system, and those people are taking that money, and the agendas that are associated with them taking that money will propel different ethnicities from that perspective. I hope I'm making myself clear here. But as far as the video is concerned, I haven't had the opportunity to see it myself.
Okay, but that's another show, actually. We're here really to talk about ancient black history. Does somebody have their speakers or some music playing in the background?
I was trying to listen to you on the internet as well. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, just be advised, we're on the air, so anything in the background is going to be picked up.
Okay.
But we're here to focus on Dr. David Imhotep. Unfortunately, he hasn't called in yet. So, Clifford, you talked briefly about the black card. And so I'll start, since this is Black History Month, we're discussing the first Americans being Africans. And this was a really startling thing that came up for me when I first got exposed to Dr. Imhotep back in September. And what I've learned is that 57,000 years ago, pygmy tribes migrated across Africa, from East Africa, in fact, all the way across. And they actually took reed boats and they landed in South America and formed the very first settlements in South America. The oldest fossils of any human being found in the Americas are actually in South America. So this thesis that Asians came over the Bering Strait once it wasn't frozen and settled in America first, cannot be based upon the truth, if that is so, because therefore the oldest settlements would have been found in the north, in Canada and Alaska and those areas, but the oldest settlements were actually found in the southern part of America. And in fact, a lot of the people in that region still manufacture their boats the very same way. And we had the pyramids with the Aztecs and the Incas, which corresponds to the Egyptians. And so the Egyptians also formulated trade routes between Africa and South America. There was an exchange of religions, the Isis and Osiris focus. And so therefore, there was a huge cultural exchange and trade exchange. So this thing about Christopher Columbus discovering America in 1492 is simply not based upon the truth. And so we've been misled. And there is a BBC documentary that has come out that shows that there was fresh water along the shores of Africa and the Middle East and other areas. The earth wasn't quite like it is now 57,000 years ago. And so people were able to drink the water from the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the lack of salinity of water close to the edge of the land areas, and this is how people supposedly migrated around Saudi Arabia into India. The Dravidians were one of the tribes that came out of Africa to do that. And I was really hoping to have Dr. Imhotep to discuss his book, and I have no idea why he's not on board right now, but I can, since I have the book, I can simply bring those particular facts up. And so now, there was a time when black men ruled the world. And now we find ourselves in a situation where we have the highest unemployment, we have the highest infant mortality rates, we're on the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to income in America, and Africa is in serious trouble. Lots of wars going on, disruption, murder, rapes occurring, and it seems like black people are despised all over the world. It even seems like we despise each other. We don't band together. And so this is quite problematic. And it's very disturbing to see a lot of black professors, when I ask them about things like Calafia, the woman that California is named after, a black Amazon princess, or Europa, the woman that Europe is named after, a black Phoenician princess. They don't know this. And so people only discuss things like George Washington Carver and the Peanut, slavery. We have these movies that come out, 12 Years as a Slave. We have these stupid comedies that come out that where people are clowning and just making a fool of themselves, yet
what about
we
the
see...
Show?
Go ahead.
What about the show, The Cleveland Show? I think that's what it's called, the Family Guy spinoff. Completely racist, in my opinion.
Family Guy?
Yeah, Family Guy, yeah. Completely racist.
Well, yes, well, that's what I'm saying. Most of the shows depict African Americans as being buffoons. So it's pretty much like it was when I grew up in the 60s, where you had white people in blackface. In fact, they wouldn't let black people be actors in those days. They had white people put on blackface, like in Kingfish and things of that nature. But now...
They did that in a movie recently.
Okay, so what I'm saying is this. We're currently in this situation where we're on the bottom of the barrel. And so, Clifford, you have some ideas in terms of how we can improve that. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. While we're on that subject of, you know, African Americans being the first in America, it makes sense. If you're familiar with the theory of Pangea, you know, the Earth was one big supercontinent. It wasn't divided the way it is today. You know, the continents are continually drifting apart from each other. But at one point, it was one supermass, which made it possible for people to travel the way they did. So it makes sense. that if what's true, what they say, the original man was founded and started in Africa, it makes sense that they would be able to explore the world because it was all one supercontinent.
I have to go. I'm sorry. I have to go.
Okay, David, well, thanks for coming aboard.
Okay, and good show so far. Keep up the good work. Really like this show. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead, Clifford.
And so, therefore, it makes perfect sense that African Americans, were the first explorers and to set foot into the United States because it was one supercontinent. They didn't have to cross the body of water to reach the United States like it is now, according to Pangea.
Okay,
now,
so that makes sense. So your philosophy is that possibly people just, well, Africa and South America were one continent, and they separated, so they didn't even have to come here in boats.
No, they didn't even have to even come in boats. It was all one continent.
Okay, which also makes sense.
Right, that was something that I learned in elementary geography about the Pangea effect. And if you look at land masses today, they keep spreading further and further apart. The distances today to a certain particular point A and point B, if you look at it years prior, they were closer together. So now the continents are continuing to spread apart, but at one point they were all one big land mass, a supercontinent. So, it being a supercontinent, it makes it easy to travel. You can walk across the lands. You don't have to try to find a route via, the ocean to reach a certain landmass. That happened years and years and years later. But if you look at that Pangea effect, I believe that, that African-American man was able just to simply walk to certain parts of the world without having to deal with water.
Okay, well, excellent point. And I wish that Dr. Imhotep was here to speak more on that. That also makes sense. And that the oldest fossils found on the planet were those of people of African descent. And so both of the theses I can see being true. Thus, people were already here. They simply went across land. But also the first people to master traveling to this continent via boat were also Africans. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Because I know of the continental drift theory. I know about the hotspot theory. And if you look at the Earth, it looks like a jigsaw puzzle. So South America and Africa fit together perfectly. The east coast of South America and the west coast of Africa seem to fit together like a jigsaw puzzle.
Right.
So what you're saying could very well be true. I mean, none of us were here, so we can only speculate upon what other people may be speculating upon. But it seems to certainly make sense.
Absolutely.
So I was looking at things like the black infant mortality rate, the black death rates, unemployment. Those figures are just abysmal. Would you not agree?
I agree.
So how do you think we got here? How did we get to this position from being the first people on the planet and ruling the planet now to be in this oppressed state? What are your reflections on that?
Well, I think, 400 plus years of slavery had a lot to do with that. And when you have, the millions and millions of Africans that were transported here and were slaves for more than 400 years, the worldview of us changed. And it impacted us to the point of devastation, really. And you had, even then, with the treatment of those slaves during that period of time, we have to admit they wasn't given the best treatment and given the best opportunity. They were slaves. They were considered property. And so I think a lot of that impacted us, especially here in America, because when you think about it, we're only about 100 and almost 170 years removed from slavery. And looking at it from that perspective, that's only, like a generation and a half removed from slavery. So that impacted us quite a bit. But with our growth and with the spending that we do, we can gain some of that back. We can garner some of that respect. And we can start recycling dollars in our community to grow our community and be self-sufficient and self-reliant. Now, if you go back to the 60s, you know, we were segregated, and we had our own communities. And we also had, when you look at the percentage of businesses then compared to the percentage of businesses today, we only represent about 7% of the U.S. Businesses. But if you go back to the 60s, when we were more segregated, we had more businesses because we had to do business with each other. Those dollars recycled in our community. You know, what I'm saying and proposing is that we get back to creating businesses in our community. So those dollars start to recycle in our community. That in itself, I believe, will change the viewpoint on African Americans. Because we can get away from some of the social programs that help to keep us and what help to keep us in our place, as they seem to think. You know, we have the welfare system, the SSI system that, you know, a lot of our people are on, and you know those systems just keep them at poverty level. So if we have more dollars circulating in our community, we can get away from those programs and be more self-reliant and self-sufficient, and create more businesses and teach our kids on how to create more businesses. These things, from my perspective, will change America's viewpoint, will change the world viewpoint toward African Americans.
I see, and we see this happening with other cultures. We see the Latinos coming here, and they're opening their own businesses. And we see them with a higher per capita income than African Americans, most of whom who've been here a lot longer generationally than others. The Asians have come, and they're actually the highest income earners in this entire country. And they focus on education, and they have focused on entrepreneurship within their culture. So my perception is that we have failed to adapt. If it gets cold outside, you get a coat. If it rains outside, you get an umbrella. And so we haven't gotten our coat and we haven't gotten our umbrella. And so one of the things that has destroyed the civil rights movement for all of us, all the cultures, has been the drug war. So people are getting put in prison for having a plant, which is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard of. It's okay to drink fungus, bacteria, and yeast urine, which is what alcohol is. Very disruptive to the nervous system, causes every organ in the body to do the opposite of what it's supposed to be doing. And people got cigarettes. I got to go out here and walk down the street and breathe in cigarette smoke from tobacco. And in fact, it's the paper that causes the cancer, because the paper is designed to burn fast, and the chemicals they put on the paper to make it burn quickly are really the carcinogens that are destroying people. But at any rate, I have to breathe that in. So they can't say that making these drugs illegal is something in which they're doing because they're concerned about public safety. It's something that's happening because the pharmaceutical companies don't want any competition from natural herbs like marijuana being painkillers. And so as a result, we have people getting put in prison for lengthy terms for their whole lives, and we have now a permanent underclass where people can't get a job because they're convicted felons. They check that box saying they've been in prison. That means for the rest of their lives, they have to be criminals, or they got to find some type of entrepreneurship. I've talked to doctors, people that have gone to school and got their doctorates in prison, and they can't get a job. So from my perspective, growing up in the 60s, marching with Martin Luther King in the 60s. My church was 16th Street Baptist Church, where Ralph Abernathy, Jesse Jackson, and Martin Luther King came on Monday nights to conduct the Southern Christian Leadership Conference meetings. And then we'd all go across the street to Kelly Ingram Park, and then we'd march down 6th Avenue in Birmingham. And so shortly after that, during the 1970s, is when the drug war started with President Reagan. And they really came after President Nixon, Reagan. They really came after people. And they really started putting people away in prison. And that was the thing. Our young men were decimated. We started seeing our communities decimated. On top of that, they began to ship our jobs overseas, because finally we were able to integrate, and everybody thought everything was going to be great after 1968. But then the corporations started shutting down their businesses and sending our jobs overseas. Thus, you have Detroit now, totally bankrupt as a result of that industry being sent overseas. So it was a 1-2 punch for the African-American community in terms of the drug laws, where the police had a reason to develop a police state. And then on top of that, we had industry moving out of our communities. Is this also something that you can see happening, Cliff?
Yes, absolutely. You know, there's no question about that. When you look at that and even compare that to, you know, the lack of parity with entrepreneurship in our community. You know, right now we have approximately 1.9 million black-owned businesses in the United States. If there was parity between the population of African-Americans, there would be nearly 3.3 million businesses in the United States, generating, you know, a massive amount of revenue and the increase in employment. Now, to give you an idea of that particular landscape, if we had 3.3 million businesses, they would be generating estimated 1.4 trillion in gross receipts, as opposed to today of only generating $138 billion. So going back to what I said earlier, that if we're able to create these businesses and recycle dollars in our community, it will create jobs. And that's what you were just talking about, Walter, the lack of jobs in the community and the increase in the crime rate. You know, people want to survive. They need to survive. You know, they're the basic things that we need, food, shelter. And when there's not enough jobs to go around, then they resort to other criminal activities to support themselves. If we get back to creating businesses, I can almost guarantee crime rates will go down, felony convictions will go down, and the community will have an abundance of jobs to support their families. I can tell you, you know, I'm in the community. I talk with these guys. They want to work. They want to have meaningful jobs. But, you know, the jobs that are even available to them is not a living wage. You know, we got to get to providing living wages for some of these people. So
I just looked at a recent report that indicated that the unemployment between, looking at black unemployment ages between 16 and 19, is more than 300%, or 300 times more than that in white America.
I believe it. I see it. And so, you know, the creation of more black-owned businesses will curtail that. It will give these 16 to 19-year-olds job opportunities. You know, growing up in my neighborhood, there were, you know, black-owned businesses there, and I was able to find employment as a young kid at 16 years of age. But today, that's not the case. And so now you have these 16 to 19-year-olds that have a lot of idle time, and we all know what happens when you have a lot of idle time. You know, the lack of jobs and focus will cause them to get involved in these criminal enterprises that leads to incarceration. Now, you talked about the laws. You know, it's in the best interest of a lot of these companies. Like, for example, when you look at Prison Industries, you know, there's a company called GEO that is on the stock exchange, and they run the prisons. Now, if you're a business that's on the stock exchange, you have to produce profits. Who is the commodity? The commodity are the people that are in the prison system, and since African Americans represent the largest population of prisoners, they're sustaining these companies to create profit year after year after year. But it goes back to that same company is lobbying for more laws to be put on the books, for longer sentences. See, prison is not about going in and coming out and you've learned a trade or learned how to do something to become a more productive citizen. No, prison is not about that. Prison is more about making money. And they created a system to do that. But we can prevent some of those things for our young kids and our young men and women in that system if we can provide them with opportunity. And I could tell you the black card is going to create some of those opportunities.
And how is the black card going to do that?
Well, from the black card, one of the things that we're able to see is opportunity. And with that, businesses will be created from those opportunities. And I'll give you an example of an opportunity from our research. You know, African Americans spend over $65 billion on groceries. I'm not talking about McDonald's, Burger King, or any of those establishments, but I'm talking about going to the grocery store. $65 billion is what we spend. And at present, and to my knowledge, there are no black-owned grocery chains in our communities. So looking at that data, we'll see business opportunities, and those businesses will be created as a result of it. Those businesses will hire those men and women from the community, creating jobs that provide a living wage. Additionally, the Black Card is or has created an entrepreneur program for those kids that are from 13 to 18 and teaching them how to start their very own business and learn from the successes of other African-American entrepreneurs that are willing to give back time, money, resources to do so. So the Black Card is a movement that's going to help the community to grow and eliminate some of the things that have plagued us for many, many years as a result of a lack of economic empowerment. Because when you have those dollars circulating in your community, you have education programs. You know, there are some of the schools, like, for example, here in San Bernardino County, they have a 70% dropout rate. San Bernardino County primarily serves two communities, African Americans and Latinos. But they have a huge dropout rate. So what happens to those kids that drop out of school? They can't get gainful employment because at the very minimum, these companies want you to have at least a GED or a high school diploma. And if they dropped out of school, what is left for them to do? They don't have the education or fortitude.
When you have a situation where the home life is not stable, it's very hard for these kids to be able to go to school. When there's poverty, they don't have food to eat, and they have inadequate shelter, well, it then makes it pretty hard to be successful in going through school, does it not?
It does. I was looking at a report not too long ago where they actually started to estimate what percentage of our population was going to enter into the prison system. From there, they can calculate how much wealth or profits these companies are going to make off prison industries. So it becomes systemic.
Well, it certainly is a very serious situation, and it seems like few people are doing anything other than just talking about it and not being very reliable or focused or seeing it as being important. I mean, we had two guests that were supposed to be here. The author of the book didn't even show up for the radio show here in honor of his book on Black History Month. And so we have a real disconnect between the leadership in our communities and what the problems are. And it's very frustrating to me.
Yeah, I agree with that statement. There is a disconnect. And, well, that's why, you know, I assemble a team with the Black Card, that they are equally passionate about this movement. And anytime you can create a team that's passionate, you can move heaven and earth. And that's what we plan on doing.
Well, I'm certainly in support of that. I mean, you've been on a number of my radio shows already, and so I'm attempting to help you project your message worldwide in a way that people will get excited about the Black Card. And I'm hoping that we can get people to focus on some of the real issues. Some of the real issues are poverty. You know, and why do we have poverty? Why do we have poverty in this country where we have the CEO of Walmart? He makes $11,000 an hour, and yet they have to have a debate about paying people $15 an hour. I mean, what if this person made $8,000 an hour or $5,000 an hour? Would they still be wealthy? Of course they would. It just doesn't make sense. This person, the CEO of Walmart, makes as much as 875 average employees. You have one person making as much as 875 other people in the company. Now, that just doesn't make sense to me. Why don't we have a maximum wage?
Well,
we've had a maximum wage in the past.
I think it had a maximum wage. You know, we live here in the United States, and we have to admit that this is a capital system. And it's about getting as much capital as you possibly can. And these founders and owners of these companies, based on the billions of dollars that they generate, that they feel it's necessary for them to make the type of money that they make. And from their perspective, they provided all of these jobs for people that normally would not be employed. Is it right? Is it right that they're able to create a company that will provide jobs but not provide jobs that will give people a living wage? Well, you know, it's up to us to decide whether that is right. And if, you know, Walmart does not provide a living wage for you, then you know, go work there, but then use that to propel you to the next level where you can find a living wage. Because I'll tell you, Walmart, the founders of Walmart are not going to change. They're not going to automatically say, you know what, you're right, Walter. Let's lower my income to $8,000 an hour. I do not believe that's going to happen.
Well, I mean, that has happened in the past. We have had at a maximum wage, and there were corporate leaders that did agree to lowering their income, and that is what happened. If we look at history, it keeps repeating itself. So how did we get out of the Great Depression? We got out of the Depression with the New Deal that Roosevelt proposed. And with Roosevelt, what happened was everybody that made more than $25,000 a year, they were then taxed at a 94% tax rate. That means that for every dollar they made, 94 cents went to the government. And what did we do with that money? We built bridges. We built the Hoover Dam. We built roads. We got the freeway system built. We did a lot of things, and we got a lot of things done in this country. We were number one. We had the tallest buildings. We had the highest standard of living. And so what happened was after World War II, the people in corporate America went to work to dismantle everything that Roosevelt had developed for this country. And this has happened over and over again. I would encourage you to look at the election of 1896. Some of the same arguments were presented in the election of 1896. You can go back further, and you can look at Andrew Jackson. And Andrew Jackson did not want the establishment of a central banking system. He fought against the central banking system. But what happened was J.P. Morgan, they got their boy in 1896, and thus you had McKinley. And so McKinley served his term, and he gave power over to the bankers. And so the bankers met at Jekyll Island in 1907. In 1907, they established the central banking system, the Federal Reserve. And that legislation was written by bankers, not by congressmen. 1913, Woodrow Wilson got the Federal Reserve legislation passed through Congress during the Christmas holiday. He pushed it through. And we had Senator McFadden, who exposed all of this controversy and went against him, and he was poisoned at a dinner. And so we had the bank failure of 1917, and then we had another panic and another depression beginning in 1929 because of these corporate policies that basically stated that people could make as much money as they wanted to make. And so we had the McCarthy era after the World War II, 1950s, where the Communist and the Socialist Party were dismantled in this country, and most people don't even know what communism and socialism is. We used to have communist and socialist mayors of cities. The Social Security system came from the Socialist Party. And so they made socialism and communism a dirty word. Of course, the things that happened in Russia were terrible, where people were executed, but that wasn't a pure form of socialism or communism. It's just like we don't have a pure system of democracy in this country today. The corporations run our government. You have people that are the head of the FDA for a couple of years, and then they're head of a pharmaceutical company for a couple of years, then they come back to the FDA. So that's why we get drugs like Beneva that are supposed to reinforce our bones, we yet break our bones. This is why we get these various drugs. Right now, if a generic drug causes you harm, it's not taken off of the market. So that law just got passed by the Supreme Court and by the FDA, where if a principal drug is found to be dangerous, okay, they'll take it off the market, but they can leave the generic drug on the market. Now, that's ridiculous.
Wow.
So the role of government is to protect people. Our government is not protecting us. And so these conservatives are saying that they want smaller government. Okay. Well, they want smaller government because they don't want regulation. They don't want a government to tell them what to do. Rich people don't need a big government. Poor people need a government. Poor people need a government to protect us from the corporations. And it's very interesting that the politicians get the blame for unemployment. But who are the people laying people off? It's the businesses.
Right.
It's the corporations. But yet the politicians get the blame for it. Americans are very unusual in the way that they look at things. And they don't blame the corporations. They don't blame Walmart for those low wages. They don't blame Remington and all the other companies, that Black & Decker, that went over to Hong Kong and over to China to manufacture. I remember when Black & Decker was made in America. But now Black & Decker is made in China.
Sure.
You know, and so they don't blame these corporations that have shipped our jobs overseas, destroyed our economy. And so the people that are concerned about society, well, those are socialists. The people that are concerned about our communities, well, they are communist. And so we've replaced the socialists and the communists with the capitalists. And these are people who don't care about our communities. The mom-and-pop shops are closed up. Every city, we got the same thing. Strip malls with Walmart, Target, Ross, Chevron, 7-Eleven, Shell, 76. all the way across the country as a blueprint. And it's a blueprint for destruction, and it's also a blueprint for destruction of American values, the American family system. You got people working, American productivity is higher than it ever has been. Yet, the amount of income that the average American is making is lower. Our standard of living is lower. The banks, the banksters, have taken away our homes and foreclosures, and how many of them have been put in prison? You know, yet,
yeah,
the prison system punishes people for having a plant. And even if you are at home and your teenage son has a phone that rings and he says, or teenage grandson says to you, tell them I'll be outside with the package in a minute. You answer that phone and tell him you're going to be outside with, you know, with the package. He's going to be outside with the package in a minute. Well, if the FBI is listening to that, you're going to be going to prison for conspiracy. And you're going to be going to prison for 15 years with the minimum sentencing guidelines. So the judges, even with their own common sense, they can't even make decisions to keep you from going to prison. They have to send you to prison because of the minimum sentencing guidelines. And
right.
So this is ridiculous. Our legal system is ridiculous. People are paying. If you don't have enough money, you can't pay for defense. And
right.
So what if people didn't pay their police bill? And then when you call the police won't come. That's what we have with our medical system, you know, that we had, you know, before the Affordable Care Act, and that's just sort of getting into place. But there are certain things that government should provide, protection, such as medical care. We used to have a time where firemen fought each other when they arrived at a fire and the house would burn down until they figured out that fire services is something that should be provided by taxpayers. It should not be something driven by profit. And so the jail system, our prison system, should not be driven by profit because then they have an incentive to keep people in prison. So this privatization and turning these responsibilities over to corporations where they hire a Crip to be a prison guard over a Blood, it's ridiculous. And so now we have this infighting where gang members are fighting each other because one of them is now the prison guard. They lowered the standard and they lowered the price, the hourly rate they pay these people. So you got these non-high school graduates now being prison guards, and they're actually members of rival gangs, and they're taking their anger out on the prisoners. And then the prisoners get put in solitary confinement. We got people in this country that have been in solitary confinement for 41 years. Now, that's barbaric. Louisiana, 91% of the people with life sentences in Louisiana are people of color. 65% of the people in prison in America today are people of color. We have more people, according to the Pew Report, incarcerated per capita than any other country in the world. So we're in a barbaric state in this country. So all of these things have ramifications on African Americans. We're the most vulnerable. We're the weakest out of all of the other cultures in terms of economics, in terms of our health care, our unemployment, our business ownership. We are in the weakest state, and thus we are like the canaries in the tunnel. So the rest of America is just catching up with us. When they start talking about recession and losing your home and not having a job, well, guess what? We've been there for a long time. Our unemployment rate is the same as it was back in the 1960s when Martin Luther King was making speeches about I Have a Dream. So we have to break out of this barbaric system that we have where we don't care about people, where we don't care about each other. You see all these people that claim to be Christians, and they claim to be loving, but what I hear is about fear. You got to fear the Taliban. You have to fear something. You got to fear the terrorist attack, blah, 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 blah. Yet the drug war is not making any difference. We're wasting tax dollars. We're spending all of this money on warfare, and yet we're not spending money on our infrastructure. We're taking money away from our education system. We are destroying the hopes of kindergarten kids. They're stopping the Head Start program in some areas. They're stopping kids from getting school lunches. Elderly people that are on Social Security are having their benefits cut. These are people that have dementia. These are people that have Alzheimer's. They can't go out and get a job. So I have friends that are having to cough up on an extra $200 a month to keep their parents in nursing homes because they made these huge cuts that went in effect the 1st of January. Yet they're increasing military aid to countries like Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran. Our politicians seem to be focused on stopping Iran from having weapons, stopping Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. They can all come together and vote for that, but they can't vote to balance the budget. They can't vote to support elderly people. They can't vote to support programs that are going to support the poor. They're cutting food stamps of people, and people are out here trying to find a job, and they can't find the job.
Can't find one.
So what kind of loving government is that? So I'm saying is we have some very simple ways of answering this. If it was your nephew, if it was your son, if it was your mother, if it was your daughter, would you cut their benefits if they were unemployed and couldn't find a job? I don't think people would do that. So that's a loving action. So if you won't do it to your family, then don't do it to other people. We need a government like that, a government that takes loving actions for the people, not for these corporations who don't care about us. We need to separate church and state. We need to separate corporations and state. And we need public officials that work for us, that are afraid of us. But they're not afraid of us because the corporations pay their salaries. They, you know, we pay the president $400,000. The vice president makes $200,000. But when they're getting millions from the oil industry, they're getting millions from the pharmaceutical industry, millions from the prison industry, well, that's who they are beholden to. And this is the massive battle that we as the American people are facing in terms of turning this whole thing around.
Right. Well, you know, and in spite of those alarming statistics that you just mentioned to us, we're still the number two most spent dollar in America, which is amazing when you think about that, is that we lead the charge in spending. What I'm proposing is let's lead the charge in economic empowerment. Because all of those startling statistics that you just mentioned, some of those things will go away as we develop that economic empowerment base in our community. Because from that, like you said, that some of these politicians are beholden to these lobbyists. Well, if we have economic empowerment in our community, they'll be beholden to who? And that $1.3 trillion can help facilitate that. Dr. Claude Anderson, and if you want to see his principles behind that, he called it group economics. YouTube him. But group economics is something that every other nationality practices, with the exception of African Americans. So if we begin to practice this group economic theory, a lot of those startling statistics will go away. It's funny, it's right at our fingertips, literally, to be able to change, one, the way America perceives us, two, get our economic empowerment back, three, provide jobs, because from that economic empowerment, there will be businesses that are created. If we can get to the 3.3 million businesses as opposed to the 1.9 million businesses that we have now, we'll have gross receipts of $1.4 trillion. That's amazing. But all of this is right at our fingertips. Because every time you take that dollar and you spend it, it's coming out of your hands. We need to focus more on recycling in our community. And every other nationality practices it. For example, even in the Caucasian community, their dollars recycle in their community 17 times before it leaves. You can look at the Jewish community, you know, 14 to 16. I can go to Asian community, 12 to 14, Hispanic, 6 to 7. But when it comes to our dollar, it does not recycle because we're spending it with everyone else.
Which also means we have a lower net worth because we're not saving money. We don't have annuities. We do not have insurance plans. We don't own property. And so this transcends many things. I mean, to me, there's a difference between being rich and being wealthy, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a major difference.
So the basketball players and the football players, they're rich. But the people that write their checks, that's the wealth.
That's the wealth, yes. Well, consider
these
this.
Actors. Go on.
Yeah, consider this. That being the case, the greatest growth potential, and let's use mutual funds for example, the financial arena. The greatest growth for these companies is to target African Americans so they can start investing into these mutual funds, right? Warren Buffett's company spends over $10 million a year advertising to the African-American community because that's where growth is. So there's a lot of growth potential in our community looking at the different industries where we spend our money. And these companies are recognizing that, and they're putting a lot of marketing dollars toward advertising to our community because they see growth. They see that $1.3 trillion that we spend annually. The message that I want to communicate to our population is if they see the growth and they're willing to spend millions and millions of dollars to get our business, why can't we do the same? Why can't we erect those businesses and have those dollars circulating in our community? That would help tremendously.
So tell me about your formula. What is your vision in terms of having dollars circulate in the community? How can the Black Card do that?
Well, the Black Card is a direct connection from the African-American consumers to Black-owned businesses. When you become a Black Card discount member, it's an exclusive membership discount that you'll be aware of the businesses in your community and the businesses outside your community. And some of us own businesses that are online businesses that you can start to recycle those dollars. So the Black Card is designed to make that connection to those businesses with those African-American consumers that are spending $1.3 trillion annually. And I can give you, while we're on the subject of stats, I can tell you exactly where we spend our money. These are the estimated expenditures for African-Americans. So let me give you this breakdown real quick. When it comes to apparel products and services, we spend $29.3 billion annually. When it comes to appliances, we spend $2.0 billion. Beverages, alcoholic, $3 billion. Beverages, non-alcoholic, $2.8 billion. Books, $321 million. Cars and trucks, new and used, $29.1 billion. Computers, $3.6 billion. Consumer electronics, $6.1 billion. Contributions, just contributing, $17.3 billion. Education, $7.5 billion. Entertainment and leisure, $3.1 billion. Food, $65.2 billion. Gifts, $9.6 billion. Healthcare, $23.6 billion. Household furnishing and equipment, $16.5 billion. Housewares, $1.1 billion. Housing and related charges, home ownership, $203.8 billion. Insurance, $21.3 billion. Media, $8.8 billion. Just miscellaneous expenses, $8.3 billion. Personal and professional services, $4.1 billion. Personal care products and services, $7.4 billion. Sports and recreation equipment, $995 million. Telephone services like cell phone technology, $18.6 billion. Tobacco products, $3.3 billion. Toys, games, and pets, $3.5 billion. Travel, transportation, and lodging, $6.0 billion. These are the categories that we spend massive amounts of money in. What I'm proposing, and I said earlier that you'll see business opportunities as a result of the Black Card, each one of these industries, we have no leading black-owned or African-American-owned business in any of those categories. To me, that's a lot.
So even in things like our hair care and cosmetics, things that we spend a lot of money on, we don't have any African-American businesses controlling that?
None whatsoever.
So what do you propose to change that?
Well, number one, awareness. You know, I don't think in our community we even understand those statistics. So one is just awareness, and that awareness is education and educating them on where we spend our dollars. And then taking that information and creating businesses in these categories so that we can recycle those dollars in our community. The Black Card, through its research, uncovers this information, and now we're trying to connect the dots with those African-American consumers with businesses, but at the same time also encourage the development of those businesses. You know, in those variety of different categories, even with this, the program, entrepreneur program for those 13 to 18, we're going to be looking at those categories and helping them to develop businesses in those categories. And one of the things I'll tell you that I've seen as we continue to run this program is that, especially with the kids, the 13 to 18-year-olds, when they go to their loved ones and they say, hey, mom, dad, uncle, auntie, cousin, I have this business. This is the area of the products and services for my business. Will you spend with me? That overwhelmingly, the answer is yes. How do I make a purchase? So one part of this is, you know, re-educating the younger generation and get them out of the mindset of, I want to get a job. Now, I say there's nothing wrong with having a job. Some people need to have jobs. They just don't have the entrepreneur spirit. But there are a lot of in our community that do have the entrepreneur spirit where we can create these companies in these different categories and then employ those people and give them living wages.
Okay, so one of the tickets is entrepreneurship. Certainly, people with a felony record, for example, can become entrepreneurs, whereas they can't find a job.
Absolutely.
Another would be reformation of our prison system to where it actually becomes a system where people get rehabilitated and not just punished. And also, what about poverty? Creating opportunities. How did we get out of poverty after 1929, where we had a lot of public works projects? Right now we got our bridges falling down. Our freeways are in disrepair. Our electrical grid system needs updating. We could have solar power systems installed all over the country. But again, the petroleum industry and the electric industry pays off our politicians to make sure that those kind of public works activities never hit the books. In 2006, they completed confiscating the pure electric cars that were on the road here in California. And so most people in America are not even aware of that. And there's a documentary called Who Destroyed the Electric Car? And you'll see that we have some nice electric cars out here that were actually fast. They were powerful. They had a nice charge to them. They could go long distances, and yet they were taken off of the street. I remember when I grew up, every American town had a trolley system. Every American town had a very effective public transportation system. Well, they actually pulled the tracks up out of the ground here and covered them over with asphalt and cement, and destroyed our public transit systems here in California, which is why our freeways are clogged with traffic. And so the oil industry, the concrete industry, responsible for that, they actually took those fully functional cable cars and they crushed them.
Hmm. Well, you can see why. It wasn't, their agenda was to promote the expansion of cars. You know, those trolley system and rail systems were not as profitable for that industry as cars were. So they pushed their agenda, and they put money behind it.
So it's really time for American people in all cultures to wake up. I mean, because this is not just a battle that black people have. This is a battle that the American people, a battle that we have around the globe. Because they're talking, for example, about giving away our tax dollars in the form of foreign aid. So right. You know what happens with foreign aid? That money then gets turned over to American corporations. The countries never get it.
Right.
They basically turn the money over to American corporations that go in there and build roads and they build other things, but it's for the rich people in those countries. And then they turn around and they bill the poor people in those countries by taxes to pay for those public service improvements. And so then right. When they can't pay it, they say, okay, well, since you can't pay your bill, then let us build these military bases in your country, and we'll forgive part of the debt. And also, we need you to vote with us in the UN when we try to pass various legislation through the UN. So they twist the arms of these foreign companies, and it ends up being the poor people of that country and the poor folks and the middle class in this country that pay the debts for those wealthy people in those countries. And they're giving away our tax dollars like this, and they're doing the same thing in the farming industry and all of these free trade acts that we've passed have been devastating in terms of destroying other people's countries. People don't realize that these immigrants are coming to this country. They're not immigrating. They're fleeing. They're fleeing right. their countries because of the terrible conditions that American corporations are putting down in their countries. They're spraying pesticides on their backs because they can get away with it. And then they import that food with these dangerous pesticides into this country and poison us. And the African-American community buys a lot of this because it's cheap. The cheap drinks and the cheap fruit and things that they bring in from these countries are then sold to poor people who then in turn get poisoned. And that's why we see the rise in cancer in the African-American community and throughout the American population. We see the rise of obesity because of the use of things like bromide and high fructose corn syrup and the like, these very cheap sweeteners that are killing people. And now the introduction of genetically modified organisms, which basically means that we're eating corn that's treated in Roundup. And this is why we're developing all of these intestinal problems in our culture. People have these big swollen stomachs and distended bellies that you see and all kinds of malnutrition. So we've got to take this country back. We've got to say that we're not going to allow these things to happen. And so a part of this means we need to know our history. We all need to know what happened in the election in 1896. We all need to understand the significance of McKinley coming into power, the terrible things that J.P. Morgan Chase family has done all the way back to that time frame, and now even taking our homes away the way that they have actually foreclosed. They're still doing these terrible things. Right. And we've had 100 years, more than 100 years, of this criminal behavior with the Bush family, with J.P. Morgan Chase, the Rockefellers, and the like. It's just been a horrible ride, and they've done some devastating things to the African-American community and the American diaspora, for that matter.
Right. And one of the reasons that they were able to do some of these things had a lot to do with the wealth that they controlled. You know, they were able to, you know, pay politicians and pay people to lobby. I mean, you talked about, you know, some of the things that happened throughout history. You know, during that same era with Wilson, it was a gentleman, I can't think of his name, but the Rothschilds paid him $500,000 to go in. They paid him $500,000, gave him several millions to give away to lobby for themselves to create central banks throughout the United States and throughout the world. So that wealth is what allowed for them to do a lot of the things that they were able to do. And if we want to make changes in this country, it's not just going to happen through voting. We have to create wealth in our communities.
Exactly. So what you're suggesting is that we start capturing the dollars and recycling the dollars within our community, so that we can become more successful and much more financially stable in the African-American community.
Absolutely. It's critical. There's no way that we can continue to be the leader in spending and allow for everyone else except for us to benefit from it.
So I would highly encourage our listening audience to get familiar with a couple of documentaries, and that is The Four Horsemen. That's one of them. And if you've seen the Zeitgeist series, please look at that, especially Zeitgeist, the movie. It talks about the criminals in our central banking system, the people that continue to get away with literally murder over and over again, and they're the ones that put Barack Obama into power, and they also control the Republican Party just as well. And Clifford, I know you know of some documentaries as well. Can you mention the ones that you want people to watch?
Well, if you could pick up Hidden Colors, it's a great documentary because it talks about the economics as well as African Americans from beginning of the time to now and the contributions that we've made to this country. So I would recommend Hidden Colors. Some of the stats that you mentioned in terms of the banking system, Money Changers, that is a good one. You can find Money Changers on YouTube, I was told. I have the purchased version of it, but they have it on YouTube where you can watch it. And it's a pretty long video, so be prepared to invest up to 2 hours of your time watching it. It's incredible information. And if you ever want to learn about the banking system, that is the video to watch. Because the banking system is the largest Ponzi scheme on earth. But you'll learn more about that as you watch the video. So those are the two that right off the top of my head I would say go and watch. Because they directly tie back into our community. The Money Changers one affects everyone across the board. You can see how the capitalism has affected the African-American community. You know, the lack thereof has affected the African-American community. And African-Americans not investing more into the financial arena and controlling that aspect of wealth.
I see. Well, those are all very good tips. And you know, I'm considering closing here pretty soon. Looks like Dr. Imhotep is not going to show up, and I apologize to our listening audience. This discussion was supposed to be about the book, The First Americans Were African, so something must have happened to him to where he couldn't show up. But, again, I think we've been able to put out some really good information. Clifford, did you have anything further you wanted to discuss about strategies of the black card?
Well, you know, as I mentioned previously, this is a movement. And we would love to have 43 million African Americans signed up for the Black Card. And so those of you that would like to contribute to this movement, go to our website. You can sign up, and it's free. And we'll send you a card. And that website is blackcarddiscounts, with the S at the end, .com, where you'll be able to get that card. And from there, we'll start sending to you a list of black-owned businesses where you can recycle those dollars in the community.
Okay, and you can also see a link to the Black Card contained in the body of the description of this radio broadcast. We'll be continuing to try to have some informative broadcasts regarding black history and throughout the month of February and on, for that matter. We do have additional shows coming up this week. Please join us on Saturday for the Citizens Commission on Human Rights Florida, in which we're going to be talking about the parents' right to consent. In other words, what is happening, a lot of young people are being drugged by psychiatrists when one parent says they want the kid to be drugged and the other one says no. And yet some of these children are being forced into commitment, meaning put into mental institutions and given drugs against their parents' wills. So we have three Saturdays in a row at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, that we're going to be having this discussion, beginning this coming Saturday. And on the next day, on Sunday, we'll be having Dr. Heyman from Sedona, Arizona. We'll be having a discussion about cardiovascular disease and talking about holistic methodologies in which we can treat these things. So we try to be a voice for the people. We try to bring forth stories and information that's going to be beneficial to people all over the world. And I really want to thank everybody for listening to this show. And please tell your family, friends, and constituents about what we're attempting to accomplish here on the Citizens Internet Television and Radio Network. Please let them know about the Black Card. And the Black Card is not just for black people, by the way. It's something for all people. And Cliff, you might want to address that.
Certainly. Everyone across the board will benefit from the Black Card. As we create more economic empowerment in our community, those businesses are going to need products and services to help run their business. That capital that they create from that, they will go out and purchase products and services outside the community. That's just how business operates. You know, the Black Card is designed to help facilitate that so that every nationality can benefit from it. Now, if you're not African American and you want to sign up for the Black Card, we welcome you to sign up for the Black Card. You'll be helping to support the movement, and you'll also be receiving exclusive membership discounts to our products and services that you're already spending for that is costing you more than it should. So we encourage everyone across the board, no matter what your nationality is, to be a part of the Black Card movement.
Okay, perfect. This is Walter Davis. I'm here in Canyon Lake, California, and I want to welcome you aboard this channel. Please, again, pass it on to your family, friends, and constituents. And at this point, I'm going to close, and hopefully we'll be able to get Dr. Emotep and also our filmmaker to come aboard to discuss possibly making a movie, a real movie, something that is dealing with the ancient history of African Americans. That's what we want to do. I'm also concerned about having people that are psychologists come aboard and talk about some of the psychological healing that we need to have done within the African-American community. We've been damaged by slavery, by murder, by the drug war, which is really an assault and a war against us as American people. So there's a lot of opportunity for healing within our community so that we can push forward with an agenda of prosperity for all Americans, to benefit all Americans and to become responsible global citizens. Again, this is Walter Davis with the Citizens Internet Television and Radio Network. I want to thank you for joining us.